support it. Republicans were soundly against it, and one of those self-identified Republicans was Fort Mill's Lewis Lang. Lang is a self-employed handyman. He doesn't have health insurance, and now, due to a series of mini-strokes which exacerbated a pre-existing eye condition, he faces unaffordable health care costs and the possible loss of his sight. When he discovered this, he applied for coverage under the Affordable Care Act, but was denied because he missed the enrollment period. His story was told by Andos Helms, healthcare reporter for the Charlotte Observer, but very quickly it gained national attention. It went viral. Since Mr. Lang has become the poster boy for Obamacare, we wanted to have a conversation with him about all of this and about what has happened since his story got national attention and his medical prognosis. And he and Lewis Lang, we wanted to get his story and his medical prognosis, and Lewis Lang joins us for the hour. Welcome to the program. Nice to have you here.
Nice to be here, Mike.
Also in our Spirit Square studio is Dr. Malcolm Edwards. He is Mr. Lang's ophthalmologist in practice at the Eye and Laser Center in Lancaster, South Carolina, who drove 90 minutes to be here this morning. Thank you for doing that.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
You're very welcome. And Madison Harney is a staff attorney and healthcare navigator supervisor at Legal Services of the Southern Piedmont. She specializes in access to healthcare for low-income families, and in fact, that's what navigators do. They help you navigate the Affordable Care Act. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Nice to have you here. The Charlotte Observer, as I said, broke this story, and us Helms was going to be on this program today to talk with us about and with you about all this, but you wouldn't come on if she came on, so we canceled her. So why won't you come on since she's responsible for your national fame and success so far?
Well, it's not a question as far as she's responsible for the national fame. She is responsible for the hatred and the death threat that I have already received.
How so?
Because of this.
How so?
Because she skewed my story so far to one side. She didn't say what I had told her.
Well, we'll talk about that. So let's since we don't edit, we're live. We'll get your story right from you with no edits. So you are a self-employed handyman.
Correct.
You've never purchased health insurance, correct?
No, that's not correct.
Okay.
Over the years, both me and my wife, we have had health insurance when I've worked for companies. Never used it, but we paid for it. And in fact, last year we tried to sign up for the ACA.
Okay.
And because now I'm finding out that I'm not the only one, that my income fluctuates so much as far as throughout the year. I can make $200 one month and I can make $5,000 the following month. Mm-hmm. That it's impossible to estimate how much my income is. So instead of getting this huge bill at the end of the year for underestimating what I put down, and because both me and my wife, we were healthy at the time, we chose not to enroll, which, oddly enough, we were going to be enrolling this year coming up because I'm restructuring my business.
Okay.
Where I will know more on how much my income will be.
So, Madison, let's talk about that, because that, obviously that affects a lot of people who have applied for and would try to apply for the Affordable Care Act. Why is it so important that you accurately estimate your income?
So when you apply for the Affordable Care Act, you're giving a projection of your income, and the amount of subsidy that you receive from the federal government is based on what you estimate your income to be. And at Legal Services, our navigators have met with lots of people just like Mr. Lang who are self-employed and have income that fluctuates. And what we talked about before the show started is the importance of making an honest, reasonable projection of what you think your income will be for the year. Then a month or two down the line, if you see that that projection is not going to be correct, you're going to make more or less,
mm-hmm.
There's no limit on the number of times you can call the marketplace and update your income.
What happens if you severely underestimate your income and you don't do the monthly updates, which seems to me to be a royal pain in the you-know-what? What happens if you grossly underestimate?
At the end of the year, that's all reconciled when you file your taxes. So if you underestimated your income, you may owe additional money at the end of the year. Or if you overestimated.
In income taxes or in premiums? In income taxes or in. You're going to owe money on your income tax or on your insurance premiums?
You owe the money for your insurance premiums,
okay.
But it's reconciled through the IRS at the income tax time.
Okay. And how much money might that be?
It really depends on how over or under your estimate was for the year.
And if you overestimate your income and you come in significantly lower than you said you would, do you get a refund on your taxes?
Absolutely.
Okay. You have had diabetes for a while, which has led, Lewis, in part to your vision problems. Did that condition prevent you from getting health insurance in the past, before the Affordable Care Act?
Just being diabetic, no.
So that's not considered. It was not considered a pre-existing condition.
It was, but when I have had insurance, I worked for corporations. So, you know, they offered the insurance. We got it. It was never anything preventing me from having the insurance. But we just never really took advantage of it. Both, you know, knock on wood. Both me and my wife, we've always been very healthy.
And according to the articles that I've read, and I think it was more than just the Andos Helms article,
yes.
you thought that if you had a medical problem, you could take care of it through your savings. You would pay for it out of pocket using your savings.
Well, in fact, that's what I had done for many years. You have to understand, I've been married to my wife for 27 wonderful years. Mm-hmm. And when we haven't had insurance, and we have had the need to go to a doctor, we just paid it right out.
You know, vision problems are sometimes not cared for by insurance. Even dental problems are not taken care of by insurance in many cases. So, Dr. Edwards, how many patients do you see who could use vision insurance and don't have it and can't afford the treatment that they need?
Well, Mike, that's rather a confusing topic because if you have a medical condition with your eye and you go to an ophthalmologist, an MD, your medical insurance will cover your eye problems.
Okay.
Vision insurance is typically for just that, a routine eye examination, partially cover your glasses or your contact lens, but that does not actually pay for a disease process. Mm-hmm. So if you have medical insurance, you're covered for your eyes if you have a disease like Mr. Lang does. Now, how many people do I see? Quite a few. In an area like Lancaster, which lost its major employer in the early 90s, there are a number of people who were previously employed that do not have health insurance now. One of the things that Mr. Lang talked about was he has not had to try to purchase health insurance as a diabetic, but if he had, he would have found that the pre-existing condition of diabetes would have made his insurance prohibitively expensive. It probably would not have been affordable if it had even been available for him.
And that has been addressed by the Affordable Care Act, correct?
Absolutely. There are no more restrictions on individuals with pre-existing conditions.
Okay. You, as I understand it, did a lot of work as a handy person for banks and for the federal government, maintaining foreclosed properties, among other things.
Right, but it wasn't working directly for the banks or directly for the government. I was working for a company who had to contract with HUD or had to contract with Bank of America and whatnot.
And now I understand because of your vision problems, which have arisen because of these mini strokes and because of your diabetes and other medical complications that you have, you are no longer able to do that work. Is that correct?
Correct.
And how long has that been that you have not been able to work?
Well, the type of work I do is also a lot, is very seasonal. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we put money away during the year so that when winter comes around and business drops, it's almost like a squirrel putting away nuts. We put away money, so it carries us until the beginning of spring.
So there's no way you could have anticipated having these mini strokes.
But no.
You experienced, I think you said, 10 days of unrelenting headaches. You finally went to the emergency room. Why there?
Because for me to say that I don't feel well and that I need to go see something, it's got to be an emergency.
But did you have a physician?
No.
Okay.
No.
So you had you went to the emergency room.
I went to the emergency room.
Which is the most expensive place to go in the world. And you were told that you've had a series of mini strokes, which led to these headaches and your vision problems. Your care cost $9,000, if these reports are accurate.
Correct.
And that kind of wiped you out, savings-wise, for medical savings. It's been said that you always said you thought you could pay for health care yourself, but, you know, if you have an appendectomy or you have an emergency operation or you need other kinds of hospitalized care, it's fairly common knowledge that that can run $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $100,000. Why did you think you could handle that on your own?
Well, again, we had looked into the ACA last year. And we were going to do it again next year, not this year, but next year, after I restructured my business so I can figure out how much.
I'm just trying
making.
To. I'm just trying to figure out what goes on in, because you're not alone.
Oh, I know.
At all. So I'm just trying to think of what your thought process was, because the possibility down the road of having a $100,000 hospital bill or chemotherapy drugs that cost $6,000 or $7,000 or $8,000 a dose. How do you offset the possibility of that versus the possibility of having to pay a tax penalty if you underestimate your income?
Well, it was just basic mathematics. Both me and my wife, we've always been very healthy. And we gambled, you know.
All right.
And if the dice rolled one way, we'd be fine.
Okay.
Unfortunately,
it didn't. So,
hey guys.
You've been described as a Republican. At some point, were you a Republican? I just want to ask that question.
Okay, and that's a good question. 31 years ago, when I registered to vote, and politics is not the same as it was back then,
okay. But
in Miami, you had to pick Republican or Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
So I just picked one. You know, at 18, back then, people weren't political. And then, you know, whenever we've moved.
When is back then?
Let's see. When I was 18, so we're looking at late 70s.
Okay. All right. So you chose to be identified as a Republican. But during the health care debate over the Affordable Care Act, did you think about it? Did you take a stand on it?
No, I didn't.
Did you have an opinion about it? Because
actually,
Republicans didn't want this bill.
Yeah, but see, you keep on labeling me a Republican,
right.
And I really wasn't.
All right.
And as far as the ACA, I've actually always said it didn't go far enough. And I guess people, because I'm not political,
right.
Although I'm getting to be now, what I'm actually shooting for is a single-payer system.
You're going to put Madison out of business if you do that. When your health care costs prevented you from working, you decided to try to purchase Obamacare. That's all correct. Is that right? Once you came down with this situation,
people were saying, hey, listen, why don't you sign up for this?
Okay.
So I did. I tried to sign up for it. But, you know, everybody keeps on saying, oh, well, he signed up for it out, you know, when it was an open enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? It wouldn't have mattered because I have zero income expected for this year.
We're going to talk about that. But, I mean, there are people who are criticizing you.
Oh, yeah.
For choosing not to take advantage of the Affordable Care Act and get insurance in advance of your condition. But once you got the condition and couldn't afford the treatment, you went and tried to sign up for it. And people have said, that's just, I don't want to put words in their mouth, but that's not fair, is essentially what they're saying. Because if you have a car accident and you total your BMW, you don't go out to Geico or State Farm and buy insurance to cover the cost of the replacement of the BMW. Why would that work with health care? I'll get your answer to that when we come back from the break, which we have to take right now. Lewis Lang is with us, along with Dr. Malcolm Edwards and Madison Hardy. Dr. Edwards is Mr. Lang's ophthalmologist from Eye and Laser Center in Lancaster, and Madison Hardy is an attorney and a healthcare navigator supervisor with Legal Services of the Southern Piedmont. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members, and the Scheel Museum presents The Wild World of Insects, Spiders, and Other Arthropods, with entomologists from across the state and hands-on opportunities with live insects while learning about bugs. Details at scheelmuseum.org. Monday, we talk about Charlotte's heroin problem. It's growing, with sometimes tragic consequences touching young, old, rich, poor. Why here? Why now? We look into that Monday morning at 9. A reminder that your pledge right now can help to shorten our summer fun drive. We're about $2,500 away from dropping a full day from the drive that is due to start on June the 2nd. You can make a difference. You can rid us of that day when you make your pledge right now at WFAE.org. And be sure to check out how you can get your commemorative WFAE t-shirt when you do so. All right? We're coming right back.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup, the Justice Department indicts global soccer officials on corruption charges. The 2016 presidential race gets a little more crowded, and Nebraska bans the death penalty.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking to Lewis Lang today. He is somebody you know from his story having appeared in the newspaper here locally, but then going viral, and columnists all over the country have talked about this, written about it. He is a self-employed person who cannot work because of a series of mini-strokes that have left him semi-debilitated in many ways, including his vision, and he doesn't have insurance, and tried to apply for Obamacare and was shut out because it is he was out of the enrollment period. We'll talk about the timetable involved in that one in just a couple of seconds. Dr. Malcolm Edwards is also here. He's Lewis Lang's ophthalmologist, and Madison Hardy is an attorney who is also a supervisor, healthcare navigator supervisor with Legal Services of the Southern Piedmont. So why did you think, after you were diagnosed with a medical condition that you could not afford to pay for, that you could go and apply for insurance to cover those costs, having decided to not apply for that insurance or not to take out that insurance in advance of needing it?
But again, like I said earlier, I did try to sign up for it, but it's
you decided
too freaking complicated.
Okay, too complicated. But, so and, but when the time came where you needed it, you decided, well, I'll forgo all the complications and I'll get it. But you couldn't get it, and we'll talk about why you couldn't get it in a second. But why did you think you should get it at that point?
Again, I kept being told, listen, why don't you sign up for it? Let's see what it does.
Kept being told by whom?
Friends.
Okay.
And they said, you know, sign up for it. You know, the worst thing that could happen is that you get Medicaid.
Yeah.
Okay. Because, you know, trying to file for disability in this state and in South Carolina, it takes an average of 3 years.
Okay. So now you went and you found out that you couldn't sign up because you're out of the enrollment period. Is that accurate?
Partly.
Okay.
Well, actually, the main reason I was denied was because of the fact that I have no expected income for this year. Because even if I did have an expected income, they have what's called an SEP, I think it's called Special Enrollment Period or Program, which is if you have a life-changing event, they can put you in that way.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about the enrollment period, Madison. Why is there an enrollment period? Why can't you sign up any time of the year?
The marketplace is just like any other insurance program with an open enrollment period each year. You sign up.
Wait a minute. I can call right now and call an insurance company, and if I meet their qualifications, they will sell me insurance today, tomorrow, next week.
I mean like other health insurance programs. I apologize. There's an open enrollment period to prevent situations like Mr. Lang's, where somebody only waits to apply once they've gotten sick. It's so that people are paying in monthly, and we all benefit by having a pool in the health insurance world. And so Mr. Lang is right that there are special enrollment periods. Although open enrollment for 2015 ended on February 15th, there are still several situations where people can still sign up today in the marketplace.
And those would be what?
If they've had a major life change. So a lot of kids graduating from college right now. If they're losing their student health insurance, they have 60 days to sign up. If you're getting married, if you're having a baby, if you've had a permanent move, these major
if
life...
If you have an employer who has provided you with health insurance and suddenly you change jobs and the new employer doesn't, you can then sign up?
Exactly. You have 60 days from the time of that qualifying event to sign up in the marketplace.
But there are situations where people whose life changes involve a newly established medical condition, there are situations where they can be allowed in. Is that accurate or not accurate?
Having a new medical condition does not qualify you for
okay.
a special enrollment period alone.
Okay.
But there is a long list of special enrollment periods, and I would encourage anyone who's currently uninsured to reach out and meet with a navigator that can help them understand if they're eligible for a special enrollment period.
You know, he was talking about his friends told him that he should apply for this and see what happens. It seems that there's a lot of misinformation or lack of understanding or ignorance about exactly how this works among people who could benefit from having it if they understood it. Is that accurate also? Is there a lot of misunderstanding about this?
That is accurate. Health insurance is complicated. However, there is free in-person help available. Our navigators can meet with you one-on-one and help you understand your options. For anyone who's uninsured, you can call 1-855-733-3711
right
and
there.
Get a free in-person
right
appointment
right
with a navigator in North
right
Carolina.
There is a problem. Every commercial entity in the world who wants you to remember a phone number is a word. It's like healthcare. 1-800-HEALTHCARE. And you just gave out a series of numbers that nobody can remember. What are the numbers again?
1-855-733-3711.
Who came up with that number?
That is the number for the statewide Navigator Consortium here in North Carolina, a coalition of nonprofits in all 100 counties that are providing this free in-person assistance.
Okay, you need a marketing person. All right, let's see here.
But now, if I may interrupt for a moment, after I signed up, tried to sign up for it, and I got denied, the next day I spent over an hour and a half on the phone with somebody out of Mississippi. I called the 800 number that was given to me. She was a very nice person. Actually, she had ties to York County, which was kind of surprising because she said that she lives in Mississippi.
Okay.
But the only thing I really got out of her, that she felt that the only good thing that had come out of it was that she got a job now.
All right. One of the problems that you have mentioned, aside from not being able to enroll when you wanted to enroll and how complicated it was when you were thinking about enrolling and decided not to because you couldn't estimate your income accurately and you were afraid of getting penalized at tax time for that, is the fact that because your income has dried up, you have no projectable income whatsoever for this year because of your disability, you earn too little at the moment to get a federal subsidy to buy a private policy.
Correct.
The Affordable Care Act was designed to help people whose incomes fall below the poverty line. Why isn't that working for Mr. Lang, Madison?
This is because under the Affordable Care Act, states have the option of whether or not to expand their Medicaid program to include all individuals below 138% of the poverty line. Currently, states like North Carolina and South Carolina have not expanded our Medicaid programs, which means that for non-disabled, childless adults like Mr. Lang, they are unable to
qualify. But he is disabled.
He has not yet been found disabled by Social Security standards. He's not disabled enough.
Okay.
So for individuals like Mr. Lang, they're unable to qualify for Medicaid no matter how low their income is.
That's because the state legislatures in North Carolina, South Carolina, and several other states have decided to opt out of the Medicaid program the federal government was going to pay for the first several years, and then the states would begin picking up the tab after that. Is that right?
That is correct. And it's important to note that there is no deadline for the state to change its mind and revisit that decision.
Say that again? I'm sorry.
There is no deadline.
So they could revisit it at any time.
Absolutely.
One of the reasons that you wanted your story to become public, I understand, Lewis, is that you wanted to draw attention to this gap, to this affordable health care gap.
Correct.
That you fell into. Whose attention are you trying to get, the South Carolina State Legislature or just citizens of South Carolina?
Actually, all of the above. The citizens and the legislators, both South Carolina and all the other, I think it's 20-something states that have chosen not to expand the Medicaid. Because, quite honest with you, politics has no reason to be involved in health care. Because as soon as you involve politics, half the country gets knocked out of it.
Had he gotten coverage prior to his condition through the Affordable Care Act, would he have been able to maintain that coverage given the fact that he now has no income?
If his income had dropped below the poverty line and he had reported that change to the marketplace, he would have lost his subsidies at that point.
So that means I'd be paying full price and not even be able to afford it.
So why do they call it the Affordable Care Act?
I'm so glad you asked that question. They call it the Affordable Care Act because there are millions of Americans that have signed up in the marketplace. Here in North Carolina, there are over 560,000 North Carolinians that either enrolled in or renewed their marketplace coverage this year. 92% of those people were able to get financial assistance for their plan.
And how many got put on Medicaid?
As we talked about before, North Carolina has not expanded our Medicaid program
Correct.
At this time.
And she's an expert in North Carolina. She's
not. No. I understand. As far as, but she was talking about North Carolina figures, correct?
Right.
Okay. So North Carolina figures, how many that applied for the ACA got shoved into Medicaid because they didn't meet that income?
There are an estimated about 300,000 people in North Carolina that fall into the Medicaid gap, that don't fall into the right category for Medicaid and don't have incomes above the poverty line to qualify them for subsidies.
Now, I talked to Governor McCrory about this when the health care debate was going on, and he said that, I'm really paraphrasing here, it was a long time ago, but he said that the reason the legislature didn't want to do this and he wasn't in favor of it was because it was going to cost the state an unaffordable amount of money down the road. In the first several years, the federal government was picking up 100% of the tab, but the deal was that if you opt into this, several years down the road, your state, whatever state that happens to be, is going to have to increase its contribution to Medicaid, and that was unaffordable, according to Governor McCrory and people in the legislature. Do you have any idea what that figure would be in 3 or 4 or 5 years down the road? Or can that figure even be estimated?
I think that study after study has shown that Medicaid expansion is a net benefit to the state's economies. States that have already expanded Medicaid are experiencing a huge boom in their economy from having low-income families with insurance.
Is Dr. Edwards, is Mr. Lang's condition unusual? Are there lots of people out there who suffer from this who, if they don't have insurance, they're really out of luck?
Well, first of all, let me just state that as Mr. Lang's physician, he's given me permission to talk about his health care. So he signed a HIPAA release to allow me to talk about him. And I appreciate the honesty that he's shared. I have a little bit different opinion about Mrs. Helms than he does, but I wasn't present for the interviews. But I do agree that she's responsible for his notoriety and did a good job reporting the problems that's going on. But with that said, we keep talking about Mr. Lang's acute problem. His problem started when he was diagnosed with diabetes. And as I've explained to him and many others like him, noncompliance with diabetic care is what creates many people's problems, not everyone. So we should have been focusing on prevention and educating our patients a long time ago. But to answer your questions, yes. Diabetes now is just so common. When I see patients walk into my practice, I almost assume they have diabetes before they even are seen.
Now, most people with diabetes that you're seeing probably, if you can make that prediction walking into the office, it's because they're overweight. Is that why?
Well, that's one of the major factors that's contributed to diabetes. When I was in medical school, not a single child had been diagnosed in the world that I know of with type 2 diabetes, and now it's common. So obesity is a major problem, but that's not the only. I'd say probably 80% of type 2 diabetics are obese. But there are others who are not. They're just genetically, it's a genetic condition, but obesity brings it on.
Mr. Lang is not obese. How long have you had diabetes?
I was officially diagnosed at the age of 32. But I had my...
How many years has that been? How old are you now?
49.
Okay.
So 27 years, Not 17 years.
So, but you told me earlier that you do not have a physician.
Correct.
You've had diabetes for 17 years and you don't have a doctor?
Correct.
Why not?
No offense to Dr. Edwards. Quite frankly, I don't like him.
But you have an ongoing and serious medical condition.
Yeah, but...
You were diagnosed with diabetes. Were you counseled on what you should do to take care of yourself going forward?
Not really. I was told as far as, you're diabetic, stop your sweets, blah, 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 blah. The same rhetoric that they tell everybody. Mm-hmm. Both me and my wife, we just went ahead and started looking things up.
At what point, does your wife have diabetes?
No.
At what point did you start suffering? Did you start having symptoms of diabetes that were problematic for you?
Well, when you say problematic, I think it had to be when I first met Dr. Edwards, which was the summer of 2013.
When the eye problems began.
Correct. I had a blurriness in my right eye, and I went to see Dr. Edwards, and he told me that it was because of my diabetes. And I started treatment, paying it cash out of my pocket until it got to a point where...
You couldn't afford it.
Well, I do understand the reason why. I never blamed Dr. Edwards. But at that point, my eye had gotten better. my vision had gone back to where it was, and for over a year and a half, I was perfectly fine.
You mentioned, doctor, that prevention is a key here with anybody who has diabetes. You have to take care of yourself. You have to do certain things, not do other things. Was he doing anything prior to his eye problems or not doing anything prior to his eye problems that led to the eye problems, or is this just a natural progression of diabetes?
No, this does not have to be a natural progression. Now, Lewis knows, I'll be honest, when I sit down to talk with Lewis, he did have access to care through a community organization called CareNet in Lancaster. Mm-hmm. And when I actually pinned him down, he admitted he had been treating himself, because you have to have a physician to get your insulin. You can't just walk into a pharmacy and buy insulin.
Actually, you can.
Well, I didn't know that.
Okay.
It's a prescription, but I didn't realize you could.
Okay.
But you have to have a doctor, to my knowledge, to be treating diabetes. But Mr. Lang admitted that he was treating himself, okay. And he admitted he was doing a poor job. And I think his biggest problem is denial. And that's not really an accusation against him. That's just true with most patients. If a doctor doesn't educate a patient, you might tell a patient, listen, your diabetes is going to cause problems. You have to tell them why it's going to cause problems, exactly what's going to happen, what will go on in your life, and not wait until you start to lose eyesight to treat the problem.
So I want to be clear. You chose not to go to a doctor, not because you didn't have health insurance. You chose not to go because you don't like doctors.
In a sense, yeah. Again, no offense.
So that's one of the other criticisms that has been raised about you in the Twitterverse after people read your story, that you and because you were characterized perhaps incorrectly as being a Republican, people really took umbrage to the fact that you wouldn't take personal responsibility for your situation. Do you feel you have a personal responsibility for where you are today?
Oh, 100%. And again, that's one of the reasons why I gave the ultimatum as far as about Ann, because I'm a person, I believe, in full disclosure. And when I spoke with her, I told her, I said, I am a registered Republican, and that's not even knowing that in South Carolina – you don't get to pick parties when you register. Mm. That's how much I pay attention to it.
Okay.
But I told her I am a registered Republican, but I'm not party line. I never have been. But in full disclosure, I told her that. And as far as taking responsibility, hey, I take 100% responsibility for my health. I'm diabetic, but I don't eat any sweets.
Mm-hmm.
I do smoke, but guess what? Diabetes is a genetic thing. It has nothing to do with smoking. Other people do alcohol.
But you do know that smoking causes cancer. You do know that.
Well, that's debatable, but that's a different show.
Let me also interject. Smoking makes diabetic eye disease worse as well.
It does?
And that's the one thing, again, you educate your patients and say, listen, when the diabetes is attacking your blood vessels, it's destroying little cells called parasites. And when you smoke, the chemicals in that causes blood vessels to be damaged even more. So it contributes to your problem. Yes, if you're a diabetic and you smoke, that's gasoline and fire.
Okay, we have to take a break. We'll come back with more of our conversation with Lewis Lang. Dr. Malcolm Edwards is his ophthalmologist with Eye and Laser Center in Lancaster, South Carolina. And Madison Hardy is with us, an attorney and a healthcare navigator supervisor with Legal Services of the Southern Piedmont. Because you have to have a navigator to figure all this out. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Carolina Neurosurgery and Spine Associates, celebrating 75 years of providing leadership in the field of neurosurgery on a local and national level. Carolina Neurosurgery and Spine Associates is on the web at cnsa.com. The Justice Department indicts global soccer officials on corruption charges. The 2016 presidential race becomes a little more crowded, and Nebraska has banned the death penalty. Some of the stories they'll be talking about in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock during the weekly news roundup on the Diane Rehm Show. A panel of journalists joins Diane at 10 to talk about the national stories, at 11 to talk about the international news stories of the week. We hope you'll join them for that. If you'd like to join our conversation, Charlotte Talks at WFAE.org or searching for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. We'll get you to us, and we're coming right back.
Charlotte Squawks returns to Booth Playhouse for its 11th edition. This musical parody takes aim at everything, from pop culture to politics to traffic and sports. WFAE is hosting an invited dress rehearsal on Thursday evening, June 4th at 8. Find out how you can join us for a sneak peek at WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Today we're talking to Mr. Lewis Lang, who is a person discovered, I guess she was discovered by Andos Helms of the Charlotte Observer. She wrote about his medical condition, and it went viral. His story spread across the Twitterverse. It's been picked up by columnists all over the country and discussed at some length, and some more accurately than others. Dr. Malcolm Edwards is his ophthalmologist. Mr. Lang signed a HIPAA waiver to allow him to talk about this condition on the air. He's with Eye and Laser Center of Lancaster, South Carolina, and Madison Hardy is an attorney and a healthcare navigator supervisor. Let's talk about that for a second, Madison. I mean, you know, this is so complicated that there are thousands of people like you all across the country who are healthcare navigators to help people figure out how to buy insurance on these portals for the healthcare system, the Affordable Care Act. Isn't that evidence, prima facie evidence, that this is just too damn complicated?
Well, I would encourage anyone who hasn't been on healthcare.gov to check it out, to go online. If you're able to use a computer, you're going to be able to navigate healthcare.gov.
What if you can't use a computer? What if you don't have a computer?
And if you don't have a computer, there's a federal hotline that you can call. You can do the entire application.
How long are you on hold?
Over the phone. Typically, hold times are less than 5 minutes.
Okay.
But if you do want that one-on-one, in-person assistance with someone who really is an expert in this, navigators are available. And so here in North Carolina, we have a central hotline for navigators. Again, that number is 1-855-733-3711. You can also go online to schedule an appointment at connector.getcoveredamerica.org. And on that website, you can make an appointment in North Carolina or in South Carolina with a navigator.
And a similar situation would be set up in South Carolina, similar to what we have here, correct?
Correct.
Okay. It is very complex, and I think that in an interview with Think Progress, I'm told Mr. Lang feels that's the most accurate interview he's gotten so far. He said that he had tried to navigate the Affordable Care Act website, found it frustrating because of those well-publicized wait times and glitches that happened when this thing first opened up, and then felt uncomfortable as a self-employed contractor trying to guesstimate his income. Have all those problems been resolved with the website? Can you get on quickly, easily, figure things out?
So there was no doubt that when healthcare.gov first debuted, there were issues and there were problems and people were having a difficult time. The website is easier to use now than it's ever been.
What is the most common misconception about this among people, rank and file people, about the Affordable Care Act, about buying insurance on these exchanges, etc.?
I think the most common misconception is that it's unaffordable and that they won't be able to find a plan that includes their doctors and meets their needs. I mean, as I said before, here in North Carolina, 92% of enrollees were able to get financial assistance. We sign people up every day for incredibly low costs and with the high number of plans that are...
What is incredibly low cost? What does that mean?
Just yesterday, our navigator was reporting signing up a family for $15 a month.
A whole family?
An entire family for $15.
What kind of coverage? What kind of deductibles? What kind of copays?
I don't have all the details on that in front of me, but there's a great tool on healthcare.gov called See Plans and Prices, and you can go in and you can just enter in your income, your family size, and your zip code and get a preview of what plans may be available
there
to you.
There have been reports that because this is the end of the first year of the Health Care Act, that many insurance companies are raising premiums rather highly because of they're discovering that the wrong kinds of people signed up in the first year. Sick people signed up in the first year. Not enough healthy people signed up. Is that true?
What I can tell you is that in the marketplace, the amount that you pay if you are low income is based on a percentage of your household income. So we know that health insurance premiums do go up every year, but the amount of financial assistance that you're eligible for will also go up every year.
So I'm just trying to get to the bottom of why this is so difficult for people to understand. Is it because many people, like Mr. Lang, never paid attention to insurance, so they don't understand how it works? Is it because a lot of people have traditionally gotten their health care from their employer, so they've never had to think about it? It's you take it for granted. It's always going to be there, and you don't have to think about it. Is it because people have had no health care insurance in the past because they couldn't afford it and they didn't have employer-supplied health care, so they've never had an experience trying to buy a policy? Is that what's causing all this confusion?
Right. I think you're absolutely right. It's a combination of all of these factors, of the politicized nature of the Affordable Care Act in the media. There's not enough information going out to consumers about how you sign up, the fact that financial assistance is available, mm-hmm. and the fact that free in-person assistance is also available.
When you tried to get coverage, this was reported, when you tried to get coverage under the Affordable Care Act and when you tried to navigate the system, it was impossible. You've said that to me. It was very confusing.
Correct.
And at one point, one article said that you and your wife blamed President Obama and congressional Democrats for passing a complex and flawed law. You take issue with that.
I know. Oh, I take a great deal of issue as far as with that comment.
And in fact, you have written a letter to the president.
Correct.
In which you say, I am writing this letter to you for two reasons. First is to apologize to you for untrue comments that have been written and posted online. You may have already heard of me. I have been all over the internet as the man going blind because of me going against the ACA and blaming you and the ACA for the situation I'm in. And then you say, that's not true. It would be an honor and a pleasure, you write, to be the poster boy for the ACA. With your help, I know I can do some much needed good. In closing, I would like to say I would be proud and honored to one day be able to shake your hand. Signed, Lewis Lang, a proud Democrat.
Correct.
This conversion took place because of the ACA?
No, actually, and again, this is one of the reasons why I put the ultimatum as far as about Ann.
Ann is Ann Doss Helms with the Charlotte Observer. Okay, go ahead.
Yes. Because I never blamed, me or my wife, never blamed President Obama or the ACA for my situation. And in fact, the only words that ever came out of my wife's mouth was that it should be called the Unfair Act. And that was it. Not, that my husband should be at the front of the line. And all. No, that was all stuff made up.
Made up? Really?
Yeah.
I find that really, she's a wonderful reporter.
She may be a wonderful reporter.
To believe.
But.
Somebody must have said that.
No, because the only two people in my house is either me or my wife, and my wife was actually only in our living room for a matter of minutes, while I was speaking to Ann for over an hour and a half. And I've never deviated from what I've said.
You, doctor, volunteered to give Mr. Lang free care. Is that true as well?
Partially true.
Okay.
Mr. Lang, the cost of medications that he needs to have injected into his eye to prevent the bleeding, the other problems, it can vary between $60 and $2,000 per injection.
Why would it vary so much?
Because there is a FDA-approved brand of this medication called Lucentis, mm-hmm. and then there is the compounded form called Avastin, and the makers of Lucentis will sometimes give free medication to patients like Mr. Lang. Newer studies have shown that for severe disease, Lucentis is the better medication. That's debatable. But for the Avastin, I was offering to treat him for my cost of the medication and give my services for free.
Mm-hmm. But there's more that he needs that you are not an expert. It's not your specialty.
That is correct. His condition has progressed far beyond what I'm capable of taking care of at this time.
So you went to another physician at this point, and is that accurate?
Well, the one that Ann Dawson spoke to and quoted prices and all this type of stuff, he's a quack, because he talked without ever even seeing me. And when I finally did go and see him, totally different answers. He couldn't give me course treatments, of what treatments I'm going to need, what surgeries I'm going to need, or even a ballpark figure of price.
Most doctors can't give you a ball. I've discovered they don't know what things cost.
But yet he
think about it.
But yet he went and on print media gave a price and made it seem like this was a simple thing, and he had never even seen me.
Why did you go see him?
I didn't know everything until I did see him. And when he saw me, he told me my eyes were a lot worse than he thought they would be. Mm-hmm. And that I'm going to need several surgeries, minimum a year of treatment, short term, long term, rest of my life. Mm-hmm. He told me I'm going to need several surgeries, but couldn't tell me how many because he has to do more testing on me.
So you started a GoFundMe site. This is a website where you can lay out your case for funds. If you want to buy a new car, you can go on GoFundMe and say, I want a new car. Would you please give me money? And people, if they feel so inclined, will do so. You've laid out your case on GoFundMe. You've told your story, and you've asked for donations from those so inclined to send you money. How much money has that netted you so far?
I think the last time I checked, it was about $26,000. And you'd have to remember also something. It's not all $26,000 that comes to me because GoFundMe does take out their fees, which is understandable. I mean, everybody's in business to make money. But, you know, roughly as far as the total it says on there, I think it was $26,000 and change.
Is that enough?
Far from it.
How much is enough?
Until this next ophthalmologist sees me, which I do have an appointment on the 9th, June 9th, with him, until he sees me, does tests, have no idea. But now, and I know I'm going to get a lot of flack from this, I'm starting to show early signs of kidney disease.
Is that related to the diabetes, or is this something
directly
else altogether? Okay. On that site, people can leave comments.
Correct.
And you are the subject of several snarky comments. Let me share a few and get your reaction to them. These are on the website GoFundMe. I want to donate enough to help, but I can't figure out how to get GoFundMe to accept
bootstraps.
Bootstraps. If only there was some type of program that would allow people to pay money into a pool, even if they were healthy, so that if the time ever came when they would need it, they would not have to worry about losing everything they worked for. That would be called insurance, of course. So let's recap, shall we? One commenter says, you have diabetes, yet you continue to smoke. You let two open enrollment periods for the ACA go by without signing up for insurance. You were gainfully employed, yet chose not to purchase health care for yourself or your family. Now that you have reaped what you have sown, you expect other people to give you thousands of dollars for your medical care while you keep your $300,000 house. What do you say to that?
Well, first of all, $300,000 house, no equity. Second of all, the same people who at first were making all these snarky comments towards me are the same ones that have been sending me letters of apology after they've heard the real story.
Okay.
As far as of my situation, not the slighted one that started all this.
Well, here are some comments that have come in while we've been talking, as they've been hearing the real story from the horse's mouth, so to speak. Peggy emails, I have no sympathy for Mr. Lang. I heard his interview with Keith Larson, who's on WBT and who also writes a column in The Observer. Mr. Lang shopped his story to the media. It worked. Now he wants to go on TV and rip up his voter registration card. That's from an interview in Think Progress. He's asking people to call MSNBC and ABC to film it. Why did he abruptly change doctors?
Well, I just not finished telling you. As far as why I changed doctor, I saw Dr. Edwards at the beginning, but it was beyond his realm. And with Dr. A, I'm not going to trust a doctor that all he cares about is publicity with my eyes.
But do you care about publicity with your eyes?
No, I call, and I'm actually doing what people have been asking me to do on my GoFundMe page, which is call awareness, okay, which is actually the real reason I even went public.
Because you say in your letter to the president, now no one wants me on TV, and in fact, Fox TV has even gone as far as to block my home number so that every time I call, it goes straight to voicemail.
Correct.
You want to be on MSNBC. You want to be on ABC?
Yes.
Why?
Because I want to do what people have been asking me to do, is being the poster boy for the ACA.
Okay.
Because, again, unlike the first article, I've always agreed with it. Mm-hmm. I've always said it hasn't gone far enough.
Ed on Facebook writes, amazing. He comes across as even less sympathetic than he was before. I do agree with him that the ACA should have been a grown-up single-payer system. Beverly on Facebook, number one, live within your means. Better yet, live below your means. We live below our means and have insurance. It is expensive, but we are not going to expect someone else to pay for our problems and if and when they arise. Number two, take charge of your health. Be proactive. I'm tired of people thinking they are entitled to health care when they can pay for insurance. We live in a small house and live below our means. Is there something to be said for that? For taking responsibility for buying insurance, even though you don't need it, because someday you may.
I agree.
Would you have agreed a year and a half ago?
Again, I did try to sign up for the ACA.
Okay.
And that's just the one part that wasn't reported. I did sign up, but it's just so freaking complicated.
Okay. JC emails, you are wrong in saying that the federal government will pay all 100% of the Medicaid for the next several years. The rules say that the feds will pay for any newly eligible persons. Therefore, anyone who would have been eligible under the previous rules but did not enroll in the program does not qualify for the 100% reimbursement. See how complicated this is? There are a large number of people who fit this bill. By the way, Mr. Lang is an ignorant freeloader. We'll leave the pejorative comments out of
there. No problem. I'm used to it.
What about the 100%? We have about 30 seconds. What about the 100% aspect of this Medicaid thing we just talked about?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
What I just said about the emailer saying that the government will not pay 100%, only newly qualified people. Okay, well, we haven't got time to think about it, so we won't get an answer to that
question. Mike, let me interject one thing, please.
Very quickly.
The physician that Mr. Lang was referring to that saw him, he has an excellent reputation in the community, and I know that Mr. Lang himself did not develop a good relationship, but his reputation is excellent.
Okay. Dr. Malcolm Edwards, you get the last word. Ophthalmologist with Eye and Laser Center in Lancaster, South Carolina. Madison Harding, an attorney and a healthcare navigator supervisor with legal services at the Southern Piedmont. We'll put that phone number on our website at WFAE.org. And Lewis Lang, telling his own story. Thank you for the hour. Appreciate it.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. Our producers are Aaron Kiever and Tim Ross. Our associate producer is Alexia Girodi, and the engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about archives, upcoming shows, and podcasts, or to continue the conversation online, visit our website at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks.
And support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Hendrick Acura.